Have you ever wanted to discover what's missing in your life? Metaphysics is available to all and is part of your life even if you don't know it. Welcome to Metaphysics, a view through the veil with Barb Crowley. Together we'll explore the mysteries behind metaphysics and how to use it to have a deeper understanding and advantage in life. And now here's your host, Barb Crowley.
Hi, this is Barb Crowley and welcome to Metaphysics, a view through the veil. Today we're talking to Jess Curzon. Jess holds a postgraduate, they call it a BPhil degree. She's from England, but it's a Bachelor of Philosophy degree, which is a specialized teacher's degree. And she has worked in a variety of educational settings, mainstream, additional needs, and alternative students within the UK. In her mid-40s, she was headhunted by a 60-year-old autistic pupil. We'll have her explain what that meant. The pupil told her that agreed to work together before he was born. Suddenly, she found herself leading a secret life in addition to the everyday one. As she helped Asher, the special student, to learn, he started to share his amazing psychic skills with her and taught her to use telepathy. Now retired, Jess lives in a 350-year-old cottage besides Glastonbury. Thank you very much. Excuse my, everybody out there, excuse my ignorance. And she focuses on reading. And she has brought us her new book, which is what we're going to talk about. Thanks, and welcome to the show, Jess. I'm so glad to have you here.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Barb. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And before I forget, the name of your book, which I just didn't mention, is Mind Beyond Words, My Decades of Discovery with Extraordinary Guide.
Yeah.
So, yeah. How did you end up? Because you actually had to go get your certificate after you started to teach. So how did you end up in this amazing situation? And who were you working with? You know, tell me about your students.
Okay, so I started off as a normal, what we call a primary school teacher. I think you call it elementary school in your country, mm-hmm. which is 5 to 11-year-olds. And I had ordinary jobs. I'd taken a career break to bring up my own 3 children. And then a friend, sorry.
What was your career before you taught? You said you interrupted your career.
I interrupted my teaching career.
It was teaching before.
Children.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I've always been a teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Career teacher right from the start.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I had a few years break to bring up my own kids. And then one day a friend phoned me and said, look, we've got this post going in the school I teach in, and it's just for 3 weeks. It's not for long, but it's working with little children, 5 to 7-year-olds, with profound speech and language difficulties. So I said, you mean they can't speak or they can't understand? And she said, yeah, some of them can't speak, some of them can't understand, some of them can't do either. And I thought, whoa, how do you teach children like that, you know? And so anyway,
want to explain some of that? Because you did in your book too, where one kid only spoke with vowels.
Yeah, there were all sorts of children. Some of them had a problem with their mouths. The muscles in their mouths didn't move properly. Some of them had problems because, I don't know, there was just something strange. I had one little boy whose sounds all sounded like they came from some, well, like Pacific Islands, with little clicks and grunts and sounds that we just don't have in English at all. And both his parents were normal English speakers, so nobody knew where that had come from. So there's some very strange stuff going on there. And yeah, there were quite a mix of kids. Several of them were on the autistic spectrum, and autism often comes with a few communication problems of various kinds. And so I went and did my 3 weeks with them. Absolutely loved every second of it. And then the school said, oh, the regular teacher isn't ready to come back yet. Can you carry on for a bit longer? Well, I ended up working for nearly a term there, loving every minute, really get to grips with how to work with these children. And then one day they called me in and said, well, the previous teacher has decided to take early retirement, so there's a vacancy. And I said, oh, can I apply? And they said, no, you can't, because you've only got an ordinary teaching qualification. So we would need you to do at least a diploma in specific work with speech and language difficulties for us to be able to give you the job. But if you'd like to do that as a distance learning degree, then we'll keep you on as a supply teacher until such times as you're qualified, and then the job's yours. And so that's what I did.
Yeah, three kids.
I had three kids of my own, full-time teaching and a part-time. Right. Yeah, I started off just doing the diploma, but in the end it was such fun, I wanted to go on and do the degree as well. So
Well, good for you. So these kids, it seems to me like we have, you know, and excuse my ignorance, I'm not in the education field at all, but it seems to me like we have a whole lot more autism and special needs kids than we used to have. And I don't think we ignored the kids before. I think it is new. You know,
I would absolutely agree with you. And we'll get on to Asher later. I'll tell you more about Asher, and he would agree with you as well. He says with every generation that comes through, there's more children who are showing up this way.
How come? Or do you want to do that later?
It's a main question, isn't it?
Yeah.
I suspect myself that this is a different way of being, and this is a way of being. I think all of us start off as babies with telepathic skills, with such knowledge that's come through with us from where we were before, and that gets shut down by what's going on in society. All that society wants is for the kid to learn to speak, to learn to crawl, to learn to do all the things that are on the checklist that the doctors have there, and the parents have to make sure their kids jump through all the hoops. I think there's an increasing number of children who think, nuts to that, I'm not jumping through those hoops, I'm just going to be me. That's what these children are. They're not interested in pleasing all the doctors and nurses and getting all the ticks on the tick sheet. They've got their own way of communicating, and that became very clear to me when I started working in earnest with these kids.
Tell me about when you first started to work with them.
Well, to start with, it was all fairly normal. My job was to get these children who didn't speak very well to speak better, who didn't understand very well to understand better, who didn't have conversation to make conversations better. So that was the start. And then one day, a little boy came into the class, and I noticed that my teaching just wasn't going right. I noticed I wasn't managing my lessons properly, and I started to think, maybe I'm paranoid, but I feel like my lessons are being sabotaged. And there was no difference in the class from the classes I've taught many times before, apart from this one new kid. And so I thought, right, I'll pay him some special attention. So I watched this little lad really, really, really carefully. And sure enough, he was playing all sorts of mind games on me. And I go into more detail about those mind games in
How old was he at that time?
He was 6 years old. He had a statement had of a special educational needs.
Yeah. So you had a six-year-old playing mind games with you. And actually being very successful with them. You want to...
Ridiculously
I know it's
so,
in your
yeah.
book, but you want to give me an example of that? It was pretty fascinating.
Oh, he just... I couldn't... It took me half a term, I think, to actually realize this kid was doing it, because it was all poker face. He never sort of... Naughty kids will play a little trick on you and then they'll grin as much, say, yeah, I got you there. Yeah. This one, nothing, absolutely no sign at all. And I won't go into great detail now because there's a long story there, but I had one maths lesson where I was teaching the children some mental arithmetic and he kept on pretending or telling me that I'd asked the question wrong, or I'd got written the wrong thing on the board, or I'd done something. And it happened three or four times. And I played along with him and I pretended I'd made a mistake. And I thought, this kid is actually playing me and he's playing me excessively well. So when I was absolutely certain that I wasn't paranoid, I wasn't making this up, it was all down to this little six-year-old with autism, with a statement of special educational needs and with huge speaking and listening difficulties, I took him aside and said, why are you playing mind games on me? And he didn't know what mind games meant, but his mask started to slip, his eyes started to shine, and he asked me what it meant, and I told him all those little wind-ups you do, all the ways you have of messing up my lessons. And he said, so it's you. I thought it were you. And I was sorry. And he explained to me, and he didn't have much language, so quite how he did it, I don't know. He explained to me that he had been looking for some years for the person who was going to pick up on these games he played on them. He was testing out all sorts of people in his life, his nursery school staff and his previous teacher and his mum and his auntie and all the rest of it. And nobody understood what was going on, but I picked up what he was doing and he said that I was the one. So I said, well, the one what? And he said, well, we made an agreement. We made a deal. That was his word. We made a deal. And you're going to help me. And I said, well, when did we make a deal, sweetheart? You've only just joined my class. I don't remember making any deal with you. And he just looked at me as if I was completely stupid and said, before I were born.
Yeah.
And at that point, I thought, okay. I actually believed him, Barb. I believed him straight away. I thought, this child is something special. And I didn't dare tell anybody else.
Yeah.
That's why I say it's my secret life, because nobody would have believed me.
Mm-hmm.
But I kept on working with this kid, and he was 100% right. We had, in some pre-life agreement, decided we'd work together in this lifetime, and we're still going strong.
Now, did you, when he said it, did you feel the truth of it anywhere in your body? Was there, you know, a recognition? You know,
I can't say I remembered it. I can't say I had a flashback to,
but not a flashback, just a knowingness that almost like a gut feeling of, okay.
The gut feeling was, this kid's telling me the truth. I need to listen to him. Yeah. Right.
And this is Asher.
This is Asher. Yeah.
And you are still in touch with Asher, aren't you? Or
I am. Yeah. He's in his 30s now. And mm-hmm. We live quite a way apart, but we are in close contact still.
Right. Now, Asher, who had I mean, these mind games, he had been testing out quite a few people to find the person that he had previously made an agreement with. But these mind games were not telepathy. They were verbal, like when you were doing math. You know, I mean,
no,
that
they
was
weren't telepathy. It was little things like, you know, he'd secretly hide just the exact object I needed for a lesson, and then sort of I'd get all the kids searching for it. He'd be the one who'd find it because he knew exactly where he'd put it, and it was always somewhere really silly. So, yeah, there was no telepathy involved in that.
And the test was the person who turned around and said, "You're doing this." Deliberately. Yeah. To recognize him, to see him. Yeah.
Yeah.
But very soon you started to realize, well, you tell me about the telepathy.
Okay. Well,
or do you want to tell me about Jimmy first and how you taught him how to be in the world? I don't know which one is, you know, you want to go with first.
Oh, gosh.
I know. I'll just drag you all over the place here. Sorry.
No, that's fine. The telepathy came to me one day when I was watching this same class, the class that Asher was part of, Asher and nine other little people. They were playing in the school garden. They were playing a game together. Now, bear in mind, a lot of them are autistic. Very few of them have any intelligible speech. You wouldn't expect a group, as an educator, you wouldn't expect a group like that to be all playing a game together, a sort of made-up story game, and all taking part in it, all taking turns, nobody fighting over the play equipment, nobody pushing someone else out the way. Everybody was joining in. They were having a lovely game. There was lots of laughter. There were lots of sound effects. There wasn't a single word of speech. And I watched and I watched. And the more I looked at them, I thought, they are looking at each other quite a lot. And that's when the thought came to me, these kids communicating with each other in a way I can't read, a way I can't understand. And I thought about mentioning it to other staff. And then I thought, no, I'd lose my job by the end of the week if I did that.
What are you going to say? Yeah.
So I just kept watching. And Asher definitely, and I suspect several of the others, picked up that I knew what they were doing. I understood that they had telepathic communication between themselves. And then you want the Jimmy story?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So one day I'm sitting
very
in the
clever.
Class.
This is a very clever. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No, don't worry. One day I'm sitting in the class. They've all got work to get on within their maths books. They're all doing their maths. Ash is sitting sort of ahead of me, but he's at a different table because he's getting on with his work. And I'm helping a little girl who's sitting in the center and she's having real trouble with the math she's doing. And I've got my full attention on this child. And then suddenly, you know that feeling you get when, you know, somebody's staring at you?
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of like that plus plus. It was this really strong feeling. I just knew Jimmy, who was this very needy little boy who couldn't do anything by himself and always wanted attention the whole time, was standing behind me, and he was beaming his anxiety and his frustration and his desire for me to stop working with this other child and turn around and give him his attention. But he didn't say a word and he didn't touch me. And I'm sitting there working with this little girl, and without even thinking about it, I just went, "Jimmy, can you stop doing that, please? You're putting me off, and I'm just trying to help," whatever her name was, with her maths. Asher looked up, saw what had happened, and went, "Well done, Jimmy. She got it. She got it." And he turned around to the rest of the class and said, "Miss got it." And they all started clapping.
Yeah. Wow. This is jumping ahead. Did they outgrow their ability to of telepathy, or do you know? Did they, after they left your class?
By the time they left my class, they were all, because no child left my class until they were able to speak clearly. And rather sadly, as they mastered speech, they didn't need the telepathy anymore. Just like a newborn baby who's beaming to his mother that he needs feeding or he needs changing or whatever, that isn't needed once he's started to master language. And once they did, they just weren't using the telepathy anymore. A couple of them used it between themselves. I had Asher and his best mate often used it because they didn't get told off for chatting in class, except when I could pick them up.
But is it, do you think it was speech that took over, that they lost that skill and started to use a different skill, the skill of speech? You
I
think that's
think
what it
so.
was?
I really do think that's what it is because there's so much emphasis placed on speech in our society, isn't it? It's so important. Everybody needs to be able to talk. It's like your passport to being a proper person once you've learned to speak. And that was what they were all trying to do. So, yeah,
Is
it's
there
quite
any
sad, isn't
chance,
it?
though? Because this is what I've kind of noticed. This is what I think, and of course, it's all just opinion, is that the veil gets pulled, around 4 to 6 years old, 7 years old, that they can see both sides. They know the other side, and then the veil gets pulled around 4 to 7 years old, and they no longer remember the other side, including telepathy.
I think there's a lot of that in it, and that takes us right back to what we were saying at the start. The autistic children or the neurodivergent children, ones with ADHD, the ones with epilepsy, the ones who are on that neurodivergent population, they tend to hang on to much more of it. They're the ones who keep it.
But still, eventually, you lose it. And the thing is telepathy is so much better than speech.
Well, yeah, it
It's
really is.
like we're
There's,
choosing the wrong skill. I know.
I'd agree with that.
So, do you think it's actually choice that they actually have the choice to give up the telepathy? For speech, or do you think the veil gets pulled and they lose that? They lose the memory of that. They lose the ability of it.
My personal feeling is that it is choice to a degree, and I think that's why so many children who begin to develop normally and then they get to about 18 months. And you remember there was all that stuff about how autism must be caused by injections and
No, yeah, yeah.
vaccinations and that, because the medics couldn't think of anything else that happened to kids around that age. But of course, the other thing that happens to kids at that age is they start to acquire language. And the children who choose not to acquire language, and Asher was definitely one of those, it was like, I don't want to start using words. I mean, you talk to Asher now about words, and he is so dismissive of them. He says they're narrow little boxes, and you can't cram an entire thought into one of those tiny little words. It's just pointless. And so it doesn't work that way.
I agree with them, and all I have is the boxes, and still agree with them.
Yeah, likewise, apart from my work with him, yeah.
Well, I think we mentioned this at the beginning, but I wanted to go back to it. Why do you think there is so much autistic now? Do you think there is a plan from the other side, or that it's, I'm not asking about the physical side, I'm asking about the spiritual side of it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah, I think, well, a lot of people, I know it's a very difficult subject and people have very strong feelings on both sides, but there's a lot of people saying this is actually an evolutionary step. Because we've got so many autistic savants, the people who have these special skills. I mean, Asha has special skills, but there's other people who have special skills, such as, you know, these amazing people who can draw an entire, like the New York City skyline after flying over it in a helicopter once and just do the whole thing from memory, or the ones who are amazing musicians, or yeah, there's all manner of special skills. And if they don't have to focus so much on, or they choose not to focus so much on socialization and being, you know, one of the gang and going off to the football match and going to the shopping center and all the rest of it, they can actually focus on this other aspect of themselves and develop it. I always say it's a bit like a Buddhist monk going off up a mountain to have solitude and so that he can really meditate and really go deep into himself and really penetrate the veil. And I think that's what a lot of these young people are doing.
In your class, where you got them raw, you got them young.
I did.
Yeah. Did you see, other than Asher, did you see the specialties in your kids? Or were they losing them already? Or were they not there and they just had the telepathy? And
I didn't see many other special skills with those particular children. But, you know, we're talking about a tiny, tiny group.
Right.
And yeah, I think he was the exception. There were some very, very bright children there and, you know, who had great mathematical ability and great musical ability. Those were the two things that shone out.
Right.
They might not have been too great at language, but those two things really were good.
Autistic kids or kids on the spectrum are often very smart. Very smart and can see the world in a different way.
Yeah.
You know, which means they can see more. They can see things we gloss over, I guess, or don't see. Because they see differently. They see differently.
Sure.
I want to take a break now. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about Asher in particular and what Asher told you about the world on the other side and what he knew from both worlds. So we'll be right back.
Follow Voice America at facebook.com/Voice America for juicy updates from your favorite radio shows and podcasts.
One thing's for certain, life is uncertain. Do you navigate the unknowns? Visit aviewthroughtheveil.com to sign up for psychic readings and classes with Barb Crowley. You can schedule one-to-one sessions with Barb for personal and relationship counseling, pet communication, mediumship, career and business direction, or sign up for one of her classes. Everyone has answers through the metaphysical plane, but they need help to access them. Get the help you need today. Visit aviewthroughtheveil.com.
We're on Facebook, along with some of the greatest minds of the world, and that includes you. Visit us on Facebook at Voice America Empowerment.
You are listening to Metaphysics, A View Through the Veil with Barb Crowley. To reach the live show, please call in to 1-888-346-9141. That's 1-888-346-9141. You may also send an email to aviewthroughtheveil@gmail.com. Now, back to the show.
Hi, we're back with Jess Curzon and her new book, A Mind Beyond Words. Sorry. We've been talking about her, you know, her teaching autistic or special needs kids, and in particular, a student she had named Asher. And now we're going to go into what Asher told her about the world the other side, you know, the other side of the veil and the world before we got there. But before we go into that, I have some questions that I'm curious about. And one of them is about telepathy. So these kids taught just telepathy, to listen, to receive. Could you also then send information to them? Could you then communicate with them in a telepathic way?
I don't think I could with most of the children. No, the only one I've actually developed that skill with is Asher, and that's only come about in the last 3 years to that degree. Before that, I was picking stuff up from them, and it could be anything from a sort of gut feeling of just feeling how they were feeling, knowing if somebody was upset, knowing if somebody needed help, right up to one little boy in particular who could actually beam words into my head, and I could hear his little voice in my head and the way he spoke.
Yeah.
Which was,
so they, you became the receiver, but just to those kids. Would you, if I had done it, trying to send you a message, could you receive a message from me, or had these kids groomed you?
Oh, groomed is a great word.
Right.
Attuned, perhaps. Yeah, I think they had. I mean, I never really thought about that until I was writing Am I Beyond Words, and I asked an editor to look at it, and he said, "So, do you think that class actually tuned you into it?" And I said, "Yeah, I reckon I had. I think that's what happened. Yes."
Yeah.
I was just surrounded by them all day, and I picked it up.
Mm-hmm. And they trained you to hear. Now, these kids, as they graduated out of your class and new kids came in, were you able to tune into them as well? Or was it the first class that really broke through?
You know, funnily enough, once the bulk of those children left my class, and quite a wodge of them all left together, which was quite unusual anyway, something else happened within the school I worked in. And I was told that I needed to move to another position because the head teacher had left and they needed me to go and work as acting deputy head, and I had to be in a mainstream class. So I moved out of the speech and language unit at the same time as the bulk of those children did. So I didn't have another lot come in.
Wow. So this group of kids, do you think it was designed that these kids come together and and work with you, basically?
100%. It was all in our plan, the way we came together, and the way once our job was done, we just moved apart. And the only one who stayed in contact and stayed in touch was Asher.
Okay. Was Asher a leader in that group, or was just one of the group, but he's the one that you had in a, well, we'll go into the agreement, the post-life agreement. Pre-life agreement, I'm sorry.
I'd say he was a leader, amongst those children, less so in a mainstream class, because obviously he moved into a mainstream class then, and that was much harder for him because he had to deal with the autism with a group of neurotypical children, and that was very, very difficult, he found that.
Right.
Because there was nobody else like him.
Yeah. And most autistic kids have trouble going into the mainstream.
Sure.
Yeah.
But socializing is hard.
Did he lose his telepathy as he went into the mainstream?
Not with me, but he kind of divided himself in two. He and I worked together, a lot of metaphysical stuff, a lot of the psychic skills that he was developing, and as he grew older, he developed more and more psychic abilities that just blew my mind completely. But he didn't use that within his family, because when he tried to talk to them about it, somebody said he was delusional, and that,
that shut
really upset him
right there. Yeah.
And with his classmates. He didn't even go there. He tried really hard to fit in. And I remember him saying, I wanted to be like the rest of them. I wanted to have mates. I wanted to hang out with them, but they were all interested in football and motorbikes. And he said, I wasn't. So the only interest I had was sci-fi. I wanted to watch the sci-fi, and then that started me thinking about places that he was a Trekkie, actually. He was Star Trek. That was his absolute
thing. Yeah.
He'd watch those things, and then he'd start to think, oh, that's like this, and that's like I found out there. And it would just take him off into – so he was very – divided, just found life very, very hard. And then, of course, when he was 16, they gave him a formal assessment of Asperger's syndrome. And it was the first time he'd been
labeled,
to his knowledge, labeled, And the doctor he spoke to, the kid was apparently really honest with this doctor, and the doctor said, have you had any other symptoms? You know, you've got this problem, you've got that problem, you've got this other problem, and you won't find this easy and you'll find that really difficult. Told him all the things that were wrong with him. And then he said, you know, do you have any other strange things that go on? And so Asher said, well, yeah, I see things that other people don't see, and sometimes I hear things that other people can't hear. And the doctor just nodded, you know, sitting there in his white coat and all the rest of it, being a very knowledgeable man. And yes, hallucinations and delusions, that's very common with Asperger's. So just ignore them, son. It'll be all right. You'll be okay. Just take no notice of them. Try and just put them to one side and concentrate on, you know, being as normal as you can. And yeah, poor little kid. So that completely shot the ground from under him.
That's too bad.
He wouldn't even talk to me about it for months afterwards. I'd say we went through a good six
months. He was actually traumatized by this doctor. That's a shame.
And then he went online, because by that age, you know, there was internet was coming on, and he was able to use it. And every article he read about autism talked about it as being a disorder or something that was wrong with you, and how you had to try and normalize yourself. And there was all of this pile of stuff. And there was me as the lone voice saying, actually, you didn't make any of it up. It's all true. You can do these things. You do have these abilities. He just said, well, you must be delusional then.
I want to get into those, but I want to go first to your agreement. Well, there are two things I want to get into before I get into his psychic ability. One is the agreement he talks about before he came in, the agreement you two had. The other thing, and this is very different, he lost his mother very early. And as any kid, he was pretty traumatized by it, pretty freaked out by it. But knowing what he knew about the other side, why did that not ease it for him?
He didn't know about the other side when he was only 9 when his mother passed. And all he knew was what his father had told him. And his father tried his best to explain a possible situation and said, when you die, your body is dead and it can't live anymore, but your mind goes to heaven. And so that, you know, it's about the best you can do, really, with a little
with
kid.
With a 9-year-old,
And so that was what he believed, and it stayed like that for quite a while.
So let's talk about the agreement that he finally told you, wait a minute, we made an agreement. I've been looking for you. So tell me about the agreement.
Well, that was what he told me, that we were going to work together. That was all, I was to help him. That was all he could manage when he was small and he didn't have much language. But as he's got older, obviously I've asked him about it again, and now he's able to explain it much more fluently and much clearer. And he says that He clearly recalls that there was this discussion before he was born with various people agreeing to take various roles in his life. And he said, we all do it for each other. In every lifetime, there's the person who's going to play the villain. There's the person who's going to be the helper. There's the person who's going to be the, you know, the one who comes along and seems nice and then suddenly changes or whatever. And he said, the thing is, we all do that for each other, but we also have that happening for our own purposes as well. And I mean, if you and I think about that, organizing something like that, it sounds like a logistical nightmare, doesn't it? But
I don't think we could pull it off.
I don't think we could. I certainly couldn't. But no, he is absolutely certain. And he said, my mum needed to leave early for her own reasons. But he said, she also needed to leave early for my reasons. And he said, one of the reasons that she needed to leave early was that it would push you and I together and keep us working together, even when I was no longer a student in your class, because his mother had asked me just before she died if I would be a lifelong friend to her son. She knew he was going to have difficulties. She knew teenage years were going to be hard and the autism was going to be a problem. And she said, you've got such a good relationship with him, such a clear understanding of him. Mm-hmm. She said, I'd like, if you could bear it, to you for you to sort of just stay with him. And I said, absolutely no problem. I'm going to be a lifelong friend to that kid and I'm going to mm-hmm. stick with him.
It's almost stepping in as a mother. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Never quite as a mother, but as a very, very unofficial mother. So,
but that consistency, that in my corner consistency kind
well,
of
Well, it gave him.
Yeah.
That's right. It was someone he knew before and it was someone he knew after. And I've just stayed with him regardless. Mm-hmm. And he said the other reason his mother had to leave early is, he said, now I know all the things I know, and I know what is beyond the veil, and I know what a tiny part of our whole self the human life is.
Yeah.
He said it would have been easy for me just to say, well, it doesn't really matter. Yeah, you have a few problems here and there, but so what? You know, it's a tiny part of your whole life. But he said, I needed that experience of having that loss, that absolutely catastrophic loss so early in life, so that I would understand how it felt to really feel pain, to really feel grief, to really feel loss. And I wouldn't trivialize it and say, oh, well, it, you know, get over it. It doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things. And he said that was a really valuable lesson for me, because with all this expanded knowledge, he could have just turned around and, you know, trivialized ordinary physical life, couldn't he?
He needed to feel emotion. He needed to know emotion that he could.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yes.
Yeah. Did he ever say, is there emotion on the other side? Or, you know, did he ever say that?
I don't recall him mentioning emotion as such, no. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting question. I shall have to ask him.
Yeah, do we? And then tell me. I want to know. I'm going to stop this for just a sec, and I'll cut it back in. There's noise in your room. I think it's in your room. I don't know if it's in my room. I don't know where the noise is.
Oh, I'm not hearing anything at all. I've got
okay. You don't have you don't have a dog there or anything.
No,
I'm telling you.
There's the occasional bit of traffic goes past my window.
Yeah,
but
no, that's not it.
No, there's nothing
I'm
else.
I'm telling you,
alone,
I think this kid's playing with us. Okay, I know. It's like, geez, it almost sounds like a dog sometimes growling.
Oh.
I know. Very odd, right? Okay,
we're going off
your
subject. Oh dear.
Yeah. Okay. Can you tell me about Asher's psychic abilities? But did he have them when he was a student in your class? Or did he tell you about them? Yeah.
I wasn't aware of them until he grew older. Some of them, as a small child, he used to just get spontaneous downloads, I suppose you'd call it. Mm-hmm. He'd see a vision, or he'd suddenly know something that was going to happen, or he'd remember a past life or something like that. But it was not something he planned. As he got older, I suppose to his late teens, he started to practice astral projection, and he could actually bring it on by himself, and he knew how to move out of body and how to move back into body, and it mm-hmm. all became much more organized.
So he it was a skill that he kind of had to learn.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, I think there was always the innate ability there, but he had to master it and work through it.
Right, which is pretty wild. So he was in your class. He was quite able to be himself with all of these gifts until he left your class and tried to fit in. I mean, basically, that's kind of what happened, right? But did he talk, even though he gave you the concept of, you know, we make agreements with people, and like his mother had to leave early for him, for her and for him, and you had to come in to teach him, and we've got the helper and the villain and all of that. Is there a lot of interaction from the spiritual world as well, or is it only in the physical world?
No, the spirit world comes into it as well. He's very insistent that we have guidance both while we're living, and he's got this nice term for it. I don't know if in America you call it the same thing. We call, when you're driving a car and you've got the satellite, we call it sat-nav, where it tells you which way to go.
Oh, GPS. We call it GPS.
GPS.
Okay.
In the UK, we call it sat-nav. You've got it.
we call it GPS, yeah.
It works quite well in English, in England, because we call it sat-nav. He called that the inklings we get from spirit sat-nav, like subtle. So rather than satellite navigation, it's subtle light navigation.
Right.
And it's quite a nice little pun, really. And he said, we just get these nudges, and sometimes they can be really subtle, and sometimes it can be something that hits you. You've got to do this. I just can't not do this. And we're getting guided all the way through. Yeah.
Okay. So do we have to do it? In other words, where you said we've got to do this, and we've all done it. So we're following what we call GPS, and it says turn left, and we decide, nah, I'm going to turn right. I know a better way.
Yeah.
You know? So did he ever talk about that?
And he said, we always have free choice. He said, what you're calling GPS will get you to a particular place, but what you do there is entirely up to you. And if you choose to go by a different route, if you choose to take another road, if you turn right instead of left, I asked him that very question, actually. Mm-hmm. I said, what happens if you do that? Yeah. And he said, it recalibrates. And sometimes very persistent. So,
You're not lost. You're not just lost and floating.
It'll recalibrate, it'll come, just like your GPS does. You know, if you turn the wrong way or the road ahead is closed, it'll find a different route. Mm-hmm. Might take a bit longer, but it gets there.
Yeah.
I think it's a very good analogy.
Yeah. I'm so glad to hear, because when I turn right, when it says left, often I'm just flat out lost. I know. Turn around. Turn around, like almost a panic. That information He took as natural in your class and then learned again later that kind of information. But you said when you get when he, you get to the destination, you have free will. To what do you have free will to do?
Whatever you want. I mean, let's say you're in Colorado, aren't you? Let's say you get into the center of Denver. You can decide where you're going to go in Denver. You can decide whether you're going shopping or whether you're going sightseeing or what you're going to do with yourself. So there's no, this is Asher's interpretation of what he picks up in what he calls the realms. There's no rule saying what you've got to do. You're just given the opportunities. And he would argue that it's very important that you do have that free will, because by using your free will, you're actually expanding the universe, because every choice you make is adding new information.
So with his mother dying, I'll use that example. When, because that's also an agreement, isn't it? That he was going to choose this woman who was going to leave early. And so when he got to that place, every one of us would choose not to do it. You know, we get to the point where we're going to lose our mother at the age of 9. We're all going to vote no. So where do we vote yes?
Well, we're going to vote no on this side of the veil, but perhaps on that side of the veil, we're going to see a bigger picture. We're going to see the reasons for it, and we're going to understand it. I think over there, we're very fearless, and we just say, I can do that. I'll handle that. I'll be all right. And,
we don't feel emotion over there, I think.
He has said a few times, you know, I really did bite off quite a lot of problems in this life. Take on rather too much. And
but it wasn't more than he can handle. I mean, he's still doing okay.
He's still going,
What do you think is the most important thing he has taught you? Or is it that, or is it the biggest picture, the big picture?
Gosh, there's so much that he's taught me. I mean, everything in A Mind Beyond Words is just the amazing stuff that he's taught me. There's so much that I don't think I'd ever have got by myself. I've read a lot of spiritual books. I've watched a lot of programs and been to a lot of conferences, but he just tells me things in such a straightforward way. Goodness. I don't know, he's told me about consciousness, he's explained creation, manifesting, death, reincarnation, you name it. He's just
I want to hear all of that now.
I don't think we've got time to hear all of
that. And we've got about 3 minutes.
Then you'll have to buy Mind Beyond Words.
Yes, yes.
Read the whole thing.
Yeah. And consciousness, did he say anything about the fact that we're coming to a point now in human nature, I believe, where consciousness is starting to be proven? It's coming out of the world of mystic and into the world of science. Did he give a timeline, or, you know, what did he have to say about that?
Well, I'd been reading up the mathematical stuff, the scientific stuff, the quantum physics, all of that, and sharing that with him. And then he said, well, it's great, isn't it? He said, you're picking it up from people who've done it through maths. You're picking it up through people who've done it through quantum science. I'm picking it up through going out of body and heading over to the realms. And we're all saying the same thing. So it's coming together. But he didn't give me a timeline, because you can't.
There is no time.
No, there is no time. That's another point.
When he goes out of body and goes to what he calls the realms, what does he tell you about that? I don't even know what to ask. You know, what does he tell you?
Yeah. Okay. The realms. I've written that down somewhere. He calls it a psychological landscape composed of light vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And he says to him, it appears like a huge library, a library that's beginningless and endless. And he says he can just go there and draw on information about anything at all, anything that's ever been thought, anything that's ever been said, anything that's ever been written is gathered in this library. And I said, well, are we talking about the Akashic Records here? And he said, I suppose that must be what it is. He said, but to me, it's just this huge library and I can go there and draw down information on any subject that we want to inquire about. So the final part of A Mind Beyond Words, part four, is literally just me asking questions like, okay, where is consciousness? Is it in our brains? Is it, you know, the sort of base of everything? What is it? Him going off to his library, finding out and coming back and giving me the answers. And we've done that for other subjects.
What was the answer to that question? Where
it
is
took
consciousness?
Up a whole very long chapter. But basically he was saying it's not in the brain. No, there's nothing that consciousness isn't. He said, I can't tell you what consciousness is because everything is consciousness. And he said, consciousness is not the same as sentience or intelligence. Mm-hmm. It's not the same as that. So you can have somebody who doctors say is unconscious. All that means is their consciousness has moved to another part of their light body. It's not in the human brain.
Did he have an explanation of consciousness? Were you telling me what it is, and could he tell us what it is?
All he told me was that there's nothing that it isn't, so it's everything.
My little brain needs something smaller.
Well, he does go into an awful lot of detail of how it works, but he says we've got a light body that goes right down from the base of the earth right up into all that is, and our human body is somewhere on that spectrum of light. And so he said sometimes the consciousness is within the body and sometimes it's moved out when you go out of body or when you're in deep sleep or in a near-death experience or something like that. And it can move up and down, but we all have consciousness and it's always there, whether we're before life, during life, after life.
And it's consistent. It's consistent.
Yeah.
On that note, we have to stop. I've got about a dozen more questions, but we have to stop.
Oh, bless you.
You want to tell everybody where they can get hold of the book and are you open to people getting hold of you?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've
so
got
where they can get hold of you as well.
They can get hold of me. Well, there's probably the best way is to go to my website, which is www.ashertree.com. And there's a page on there where people can get in touch or they can sign up for my monthly newsletter and stay in touch that way. The book is due to be published in the UK on April the 26th and in the US on May the 1st.
Mm-hmm. But they can pre-order, I believe.
You can pre-order now, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, wherever books are sold, it's available. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or you can go to www.sixthbooks, that's a six and a th, -books.com. And there's more information on there if they put my name into it.
Great.
Book title. Yeah.
Well, Jess, thanks so much for being on. I've really enjoyed it. And I've got a million more questions.
I hope the book answers them for you. It's lovely talking to you, Barb. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for Metaphysics, A View Through the Veil. Please tune in for another edition with your host, Barb Crowley, next Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Enjoy your upcoming weekend.